It's March the 22nd, 2017. This is 508, a show about Worcester. Today on the show, Nicole Malone. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Greg Opperman.
Hey.
Brendan Mellican.
Hey.
And I'm Mike Benedetti. Today on the show, we're mostly going to talk to these two people about the Worcester Veg Fest, Veg Worcester, organizing good cultural stuff in Worcester, all of these things. There's also a couple of news stories I want to talk about if we have time. By news stories, I think we just mean stuff that the Telegram and Gazette reports about or that the city issues reports about.
All right.
So we might talk about this, mostly crime-related stuff. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going great. Veg Fest is coming up.
So the Veg Fest is coming up Sunday, April the 30th at the DCU Center.
Yeah.
How many Veg Fests have there been?
This is number 8.
The 8th Veg Fest.
This will be our 8th Veg Fest. We're about a month away.
Okay.
Things are looking great.
Okay.
It's going to be the best one yet.
What's gonna be happening at this Veg Fest for people who haven't been there?
If you've never been to Veg Fest, you should absolutely take this opportunity to go. It's at the DCU Center, and we kind of gather 100 or so vendors that bring 100% vegan food and goods, and it's a great day. Lots of people come. There's live music, we have speakers, there's interactive activities, and it's totally free. I don't know if I mentioned that. It's free.
And it's a big thing. Like last year, how many people came?
The last 2 years, we've consistently had over 10,000 people attend in a 6-hour window.
Right. That's pretty amazing.
I find that number fascinating. I'm just, as one of the organizers, have you been keeping track of how many of your attendees are not from Worcester proper, and if so, like where they're coming from? It just strikes me as a huge number.
Absolutely. So we do a survey for attendees every year, and this is obviously a little bit skewed by the people who are willing to fill out the survey.
Sure.
But a lot of people travel. People come from all over, as far as Maine or upstate New York, and even sometimes Pennsylvania.
Very cool.
We even have a vendor from Pennsylvania. I would say probably about anywhere between 25-30% are local, less than 15 miles away,
mm-hmm.
But the rest are 50 miles or more, and a significant chunk, probably another third, come from 30 miles or more.
Fantastic. Now, I just find it fascinating when there are successful events that aren't just catering to the local demographic and
That's a big reason why we stopped being the Worcester Veg Fest and we became the New England Veg Fest.
That's right. It is, even though it is the New England Veg Fest, it is organized by Veg Worcester and it's in Worcester. I want to sort of talk our way through the history of this a little bit, because Veg Worcester is something that I bring up to people all the time when I'm trying to explain Worcester. I think about two experiences I have in Worcester all the time. One is that people and groups in Worcester are strangely disconnected. There are plenty of connections in the world yet to be made anywhere. But in Worcester especially, every year I'm coming up against finding things that are amazing to me that I love so much that I never knew about. And how did I never know about this? And the other phenomenon, which I've especially seen through Veg Worcester, is that Worcester sort of feels like scientifically what you would call a supersaturated solution, where you dissolve so much salt in a glass of water that it technically can't hold any more salt, but there's not so much salt that it's falling to the bottom. But it's just waiting. It's just waiting for something crazy to happen. You put one little more grain of salt in that supersaturated thing, and suddenly you'll see just a cloud of salt crystals form in that glass of water. And I think about Veg Worcester that way. That sometimes in Worcester there's just all of this pent-up energy or this pent-up interest in something. I think that one thing we've seen this recently with is the phenomenon of Turtle Boy Sports, where there's all this pent-up political and social feeling, and it just takes the one right thing to come in, and suddenly this crystal forms through the thing. I feel like Veg Worcester is the same way. Can you talk a little bit about the history of Veg Worcester?
Yeah, Veg Worcester came from myself and a few other friends. We had done a lot of activism stuff in college, a lot of networking around the Worcester community, and after college, in about 2008, 2009, we started thinking about having like an event that was open to the public. So our first year, we booked Worcester State College for the first Veg Fest, and we had probably like 25 exhibitors and maybe like 500, 1,000 attendees. And it was, you know, it was very small. And at the time, we were doing things like, you know, using our old college campus for like free copies and like trying to get as much stuff for free as possible. And we were all volunteer. Mm-hmm. And we built up from there, moving from, you know, Worcester State to Worcester Regional Technical High School, to the airport, all the way up to the DCU Center. And just like you said, with all that pent up energy, I don't claim to be responsible for this, but, you know, as VegFest grew, like so many other vegan businesses opened up in Worcester, we now have like 2 Loving Huts. We have, you know, tons of other great restaurants.
You know, and there was a lot before Veg Worcester and before the Veg Fest, because I just remember, you know, we'd go to the Boston Veg Fest and you're talking to people there who would travel to Veg Fest around the country. This is before there was a Worcester Veg Fest, and you would say, oh, I'm from Worcester. And some of these exhibitors would say, why are there so many vegetarian places in Worcester? Like, why is it when I come to do the Boston Veg Fest, I always end up driving out to Worcester to go to a vegan restaurant? Do you have an idea of why we have this disproportionate number of vegetarian restaurants?
I mean, I think we have a critical mass. I think that we've shown that.
I'm talking about before Veg Worcester.
There is a history here, though. I got a little bit of this in a weird way from Highland Street's, you know, de facto historian Brian Goslow not too long ago, that he was sitting up front and telling me how, so back in the early 80s, the late 70s, early 80s, there was still a pretty dense, like hippie community on Highland Street in Worcester, self-described. The Highland Street Renaissance was a fair that used to take place in the parking lot where the Soul is now in the early 80s. And where the Bean Counter is now was one of the first vegan restaurants. It might have been just vegetarian, but if not, I think it was vegan in the region. This was going back late 70s, early 80s. And it was apparently it was famous, locally famous and regionally famous, and like to the point where when the Kinks came to play in Worcester, like that's where they went, because it was they only came to Worcester because lead singer was vegan. And like that was the only place that you could actually eat locally. Like there is a funny thing here that almost without changing demographics, like we have had that, to your point, there's like a history of, you know, a vegetarian, a vegan sort of strain that's cut through a city that probably describes itself happily as meat and potatoes.
Yeah, you know, people were telling me about, I was talking to one of the people at one of the VegFest organizing things, and he was talking about a place down near Holy Cross back in the day that was like the only vegetarian place in town, or the only vegan place in town, like back in the 70s.
The city now, yeah, because the story that Goslow was telling me was where the Bean Counter is now. I wish I could remember the name of it.
That's so funny. Well, anyway, so for whatever reason, we have had like a lot of vegetarian restaurants, but I just remember in those early days of Veg Worcester, especially, like, it seemed like the vegetarian activity in the city, besides there being some restaurants, was like Steve Baer doing a lot of stuff and writing long articles for the In-City Times about whatever animal rights thing he was interested in and working on, and like a few others of us like flyering some college campuses. And other than that, I don't think that there was that much going on. But it seemed, I mean, maybe this is wrong, but it just seemed like once Veg Worcester started rolling, suddenly people started coming out of the woodwork.
Well, yeah, I think there is a snowball effect. And, you know, Worcester clearly has had like so many people in the vegan community over so many years. It's a city that like punches above its weight in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get the ball rolling, you know, having things like the circus protests and us flyering and stuff like that, you know, it's just more and more people plug in, more and more people get interested. There are now, you know, I hope more vegans than ever in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And we have like a world-class community. Like we have as good as, if not better, a vegan community as other, you know, giant cities. You know, certainly like we compete with like Boston and, you know,
What about Providence?
Providence? Providence is a food town. I think we stand toe-to-toe with them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I know our Veg Fest happens to be bigger than, for example, like the Paris Veg Fest.
Really?
Which is, you know, the capital of, the world's capital of food in a way.
Right,
and, you know, super European. Yeah, I mean, we just do very, very well, and we're very proud of
So before I derailed the history of Veg Worcester, you were talking about the early years. I remember too this is just gonna be us rambling and reminiscing, I guess, today. I remember like that first one at Worcester State when like there were times when things were like kind of crowded. or when like rooms were kind of full, and you were just like, yes, like this room is partially full. And we like run out of food like fairly early on in the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were, compared to what we have now, there was relatively little food. I think we had Belmont Veg and Udabi, and a few scattered sample tables, and that was it.
Yeah.
This year we have something like, what, 30 food vendors?
Almost, yeah, I think we're pushing 40 at this
point. All of them will have food to some regard. We have food trucks. You know, we have all your local favorites. People are coming from Boston. Vegan Treats, the bakery, is coming from Pennsylvania. And they have a line a mile long all day to sell like cupcakes, donuts, cakes. It's incredible. I mean, their stuff is incredible. It's worth the wait. But.
So, Nicole, I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit more about, a little bit more about the Veg Fest this year. Like, what kinds of vendors are going on, or if people have been in past years, what are they going to see? Are they going to see stuff that's new, or is it going to just be the old favorites?
We're going to have a lot of old favorites. Once someone vends at the Veg Fest, they're kind of stuck with us. They love it, and they look forward to coming back every year. But we do have new faces. I think. The vegan movement is definitely, you know, moving forward, so there's a lot of new businesses that have popped up in the past few years, and we worked really hard to reach out and find them and invite them to be a part of VegFest, and there's some good stuff coming this year.
Cool. Do you have any advice now after you know, sort of been the manager of the VegFest for a few years?
Yeah, this is my second year. Advice to who?
I don't know. People who are thinking about, you know, people who hear this story about the Worcester Veg Fest, and you know, Veg Worcester, you know, started off as a bunch of college kids renting out like the DCU, the biggest venue in the city, among the biggest venues in the city.
Yeah.
People who hear this story and say, why am I not doing this? Why is my project not doing this? If these guys can do this, what would you tell people who are starting out on this path?
I think that's hard for me to answer, because I came in at a point where it was already like a thing, and I've learned so much in the last 2 years about this. Just planning an event at this scale in general, and kind of staying true to your original mission, and supporting your community and these businesses that we really are glad exist. But yeah, I guess like, you know, just working your ass off, finding these people, building relationships with them, supporting them so that they in turn support you. We're really just being ourselves, and there's a lot of people out there that feel similarly, and they're ready to help us, they're ready to be a part of it, and veganism is the future.
So. Cool. Do you think the other guys have any other comments?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, start small. Like I said before, like, our first year, we put sweat into everything. We had no money, no budget.
Mm-hmm.
We got the venue for free. Like I said, we used, like, free copiers, free-ish copiers.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely everything was free or donated. And from there, we were able to kind of trade up to bigger and better stuff that, you know, over time, our sweat, we started trading in for, you know, money and budgets, and now our budget is tens of thousands of dollars, and we were able to hire Nicole, which is a first for us, because until then we're all volunteer. But just, you know, do it small, do what you can, try to like prove out your concept first with like a smaller, lower stakes thing, and then go from there. I know other Veg Fest, some have started renting out venues like the DCU Center, and just going like whole hog, no pun intended. Soy hog, going soy hog the first year, and it's been kind of a bummer, and they haven't come back to do it since then. So yeah, definitely start lower stakes, build from there, focus on what you can accomplish, rather than trying to envision like how do you get from 0 to 100, get from 0 to 10, and then,
you know, it kind of reminds me of Start in the Street in a way, because you know, there were plenty of Start in the Streets that were not particularly well attended, but like they did not give up doing it, and eventually figured out like the formula and built the relationships. And now when they do it, it's like one of the best things of the year in Worcester. And the last thing you would say is it was sparsely attended. It's like, you can't imagine it having more attendees.
Kind of like the Veg Fest. Like,
yeah, we can't. It's almost at a point where.
Should we tell people not to go?
No, never.
But I think to Greg's point, even still, we're like 90% reliant on volunteers. You know, everyone, there's six of us on the organizing team. Almost all of us are working full-time jobs and still being able to really dedicate ourselves to this in our off time. And then things like flyering, we depend on our volunteers. We have our volunteer nights. We've attended some. And that's really what it's all about. You know, we're doing the best we can, and it kind of with a DIY mentality, and just, yeah, we're being smart about where we're putting our efforts and really, yeah, using our resources.
Let's switch over to a couple news items, and then we'll come back to vegetarianism later in this show. You know, I have to say, a lot of people complain about the Telegram Gazette website, and you know, since they've been bought by some other company that has a standardized format. But one thing I really like about it is it has a really effective Worcester RSS feed, and because of this, I see like every Worcester story now like flashes in front of my eyes. Sometimes the same story multiple times a day shows up in this feed, so I'm aware of so many more crime stories. It's not that there's so much more crime in Worcester than I thought. There's just much more interesting crime, and this is something which. I guess it was yesterday in the paper, Worcester man allegedly, we should emphasize, allegedly bought restaurants, other properties with illegal drug money. This is about the arrest of Kevin A. Perry. In 2005, he was convicted of conspiracy to manufacture ecstasy. He served a few years in prison. According to this article, he went back to manufacturing and distributing drugs like steroids, cocaine, and fentanyl. Also possibly worked as a fitness trainer. This article is a little confusing. U.S. attorney alleges that in 2002 he started buying and renovating properties, 8 in Worcester and 1 in Millbury, and this is why he has now been arrested and is showing up in federal court. And I was looking up these 8 Worcester properties. One is the usual on Shrewsbury Street. The second is Blackstone Tap on Water Street. The third is 38 Woodford Street, a 3-family home by Vernon Park. The fourth is 50 Gibbs Street, number 6, a condo across from Walmart. I don't even need to say the addresses of all these. You can look at the article. The fifth is a condo near St. Gobain. The sixth is a 3-family home near Crow Hill. The seventh is a 3-family home near Broadmeadow Brook. And the eighth is a single-family home in West Tatnick. And I don't know, this sort of always fascinates me. I think it's just maybe from watching, you know, from watching Breaking Bad or whatever. I sort of always wonder, like, you know, like how much of the above ground economy is like filled with drug money, you know, like how many little stores in Worcester are there as like a basically just a laundry. You're like, why does nobody ever go into this store? Well, it's just there to launder drug money, you know. Or like, how many of these properties in Worcester did somebody buy with like some sort of ill-gotten gains? I don't know. Occasionally stories like this pop their heads above water, and you learn a little bit more about what goes on, what maybe goes on. The rest of the time, it's a great mystery. I don't know. You guys don't have any comments on this, do you?
I will say that I have walked into an obvious drug front before.
Uh-huh.
To buy a soda.
Uh-huh.
The soda was like way expired and flat, and I noticed that it was in Cambridge Street. It was that little place that's like New Print Shopper.
Are you alleging that this is a thing, or
this
you know?
This place is closed now, so I do not feel
bad about making
these. I think they're trying to turn it into like a small supermarket, a small market.
Yeah.
That is probably not going to be a drug front. But I will say that, like, yeah.
It's definitely not going to be a drug front.
Yeah, this place formerly was filled with expired food. There was a guy with like a giant flat screen TV just like watching it, and uh-huh. It seemed like they had like a 6-inch thick steel door in the back.
Huh.
And just not really a great location to have a little bodega or a little market. So yeah. I suspect it.
It's definitely a phenomenon. And there's plenty of times when it's very obvious, like whenever they, you know, they bust some little cell phone store and they find however huge amount of heroin in there. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting article. The other thing is that the police put out their 2016 police statistics. I guess last week they announced this report to the city council.
the police chief made this report noting decreases in violent and property crimes in 2016 versus 2015 and over the past 5 years in general. There's a couple areas where crime was up a bit in 2016. Aggravated assaults and vehicle thefts, for whatever reason. Also, traffic accidents were up. And arrests were down more than 4%. And according to the report, this is mainly because of the police department's crisis intervention team, which deals with incidents where it makes more sense to call a social worker rather than arrest somebody. I've had a little interaction with the crisis intervention team in my doing volunteer work, and I've been very impressed by this idea and by the implementation of this idea. Anyway, I think that this is good news. Like, I feel like there's occasionally years where, like, you know, how many people were normally killed in Worcester, Brendan? Like, 6? Homicide. 10?
It would appear 9 is the 5-year average.
9. Yeah, that occasionally you have these years where it goes from, like, 7 to 8, which is, like, a whatever percent increase in homicide, or especially maybe, like, in the first couple months of the year it spikes, and then people are like, ah, why are we having this murder spree? And then, but looking at the numbers, you're like, okay.
I feel like we have this conversation every time these numbers come out, but it's like to preface, like, there's obviously like no good number of people killed like anywhere.
Right.
But that's actually like as somebody who grew up in like the 80s, like that seems like a shockingly low number to have a city of 200,000 people and there are 8 murders. And like, there's lots of obvious things that have happened in the last 20, 30 years in terms of healthcare and whatnot that have improved outcomes for people who are victims. Like, so 30 people were shot. We could probably assume you go back to the 50s, 60s, 70s that of those 30 people,
half of them
they
would
have
died,
made that number 8 larger.
Yeah.
But it still just seems like a really, really low number. And it's, I get a kick out of how people constantly talk about how society has become more and more violent. But all you kind of have to do is look at numbers on a long enough timeline and you realize the opposite is very much true.
Or especially how Worcester is becoming more and more violent. I mean, again, just reading all these crime stories in the paper every day. On the one hand, I'm always shocked where it's like, oh, somebody was stabbed in the Y parking lot at 4 in the afternoon yesterday. And I think, oh, I was in that parking lot at 2 in the afternoon yesterday. Like, that was
It's easy to make it very close. But yes. At the same time, we don't do a really good job of recognizing how many individuals that are involved in violent crime knew each other prior to the crime. Which eliminates the overwhelming majority of society from potentially being the victim of a violent crime.
But except for you, I should probably not be that afraid of people stabbing me.
Yeah,
like, no, people I know.
As someone who does carry a pocket knife, right? Like, I mean, definitely stay on that side of the couch. But the likelihood is slim, and it's not to say terrible things can't happen randomly to people. But I think when you pick apart the numbers, oftentimes you find it's really just a very small pool of people engaged in violent crime that tends to be bred from other aspects of social ills that ultimately are the problem, not just the violent crime itself.
I feel like it's journalistic malpractice for us to talk about crime statistics without hyping them up and freaking people out.
Okay.
So what can we hype up here?
If you have a car, lock your doors. That's
because look at this.
You're
20% higher motor vehicle theft.
Yep.
People can't see this. Also, 17% higher noise disturbances.
But
the city is going to hell.
Lock your doors, but one thing to keep in mind too, that it seems to be there's fewer people breaking into cars just to steal the change from your center console.
Yeah, nobody can see this. There's a 19% increase in 2016 versus 2015. 19% increase in motor vehicle theft, 11% increase in breaking and entering, but a tiny decrease in larceny from motor vehicles.
I'm going to make the outlandish claim that the 5-year average of 8.67% drop in theft from motor vehicles is directly related to the city of Worcester's shift away from coin-based parking meters to credit card-based parking meters. And since nobody carries leaves change in their center console anymore, there's no reason to break in and rifle through and steal stuff.
That's an interesting. That's an
interesting
claim.
Keep up the good work, city of Worcester.
That's an interesting claim. So, looking at the.
Electronic tolling on the pike. No more tolls on the pike. No more reason to keep quarters in the ashtray.
There, I never heard about that. To say, you're gonna have a lot less crime if you have these automated, easy pass.
Well, as a walker, you might not realize that. When was the last time you hit a toll on the pike on foot? That doesn't happen very often.
It does not happen. It does not happen.
I mean, my commute, and I would definitely carry 20, 40 bucks my car.
Change everywhere. Yeah.
Just making the round trip costs about 20 bucks.
Yes.
So
and you don't need to do that anymore.
That's enough for somebody to punch through your window and grab it and run.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the 5%, this is the last thing we're going to say on this, looking at last year versus the sort of 5% running average,
the places where we saw an increase was in incidence, up 7%. I don't know how much up the population is over the last 5 years. I think a little, but probably not 7%. Motor vehicle theft up, and then traffic accidents up, and then noise disturbances up.
Keep it down, Lister.
What is up with these noise disturbances? This is maybe also the population going up, and it's just getting louder? I don't know. The last thing I want to ask people is, what are you excited about in Worcester these days, especially for you two, vegetarian or vegan things in Worcester these days? Greg Ockman, I'll start with you so Nicole can think about this for a second.
Yeah. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't say the New England Veg Fest, April 30th.
What else?
You know, in Worcester, I think there are a lot of exciting things. I think there's a lot of energy, especially after the election. I think a lot of people are turning it into like really positive stuff, and we'll see how it takes shape.
I'm very excited to see how it takes shape. Brendan, what are you excited about?
Spring. It's as an ice cream man.
Oh yeah, we should point out that today we're taping in Woodbury on Highland Street.
There it is. Where the sorbet is always vegan.
Is that correct?
Vegetarian at least, but yeah, no, it's no, our sorbet is always vegan.
Told me the sorbet is always vegan. That's why I was disappointed if that wasn't true.
Yeah.
Also, so there you go.
It's the ice cream I'm still working on. I owe Drew that one. The vegan ice cream. We're getting there.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. By spring, we should have at least one flavor of vegan ice cream in rotation all the time. As a non-vegan, I'm having some challenges working through mouthfeel and taste, and I'm not exactly where I want it to be right now.
I'm glad you're prioritizing it, because there's plenty of terrible vegan ice cream in the world.
Yeah, no, and that's not acceptable to me. Like, if I'm going to make it, it is going to be dense, chewy, New England-style ice cream just with other dairy.
So awesome.
We'll get there.
Awesome.
I apologize for the delay.
That's okay.
Next year, we'll be at New England Veg Fest.
What do you think?
Well, I'll be looking forward to the vegan ice cream and New England Veg Fest and spring and everything and this energy. That's definitely present in Worcester right now. Definitely a renaissance happening. And I'm kind of new to the Worcester scene. I've always been in Worcester County, but this is probably the most I've spent out here, and I love it. And there's always new things to explore and learn about. So
you're excited about the existence of Worcester itself.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are still here.
That's great.
I'll tell you what I'm excited about this week. This is running through March the 26th. At the Michelson Theater at Clark University, their performance of Shakespeare's Henry IV Part I. I went to this as part of my personal policy to try to go to every Shakespeare and every opera performance in Worcester, just because, while not a high culture guy, I am somewhat fascinated by high culture. And this is a student production. Here's the caveats. This is a student production, so it's a student production. Almost all of the parts are played by women. I would say 90% of the parts are played by women, which for a play about a bunch of guys is surprising. So if that turns you off, don't see this. But otherwise, this is great. Like, it's great, and it gets better and better as this goes along, this play. The staging is very interesting, and the actresses who play Henry IV, Prince Hal, Hotspur, and Falstaff all do a tremendous job. And since it's a play about these four people, it's great. It's great. I'm so impressed at this play, and it is $5. So if you want to go see a bunch of Clark students, do a really interesting version of Henry IV, Part One only. You should go to Clark. You can Google this or look this up on Facebook. That's what I'm excited about in Worcester. Well, thanks for being on the show, everybody. Nicole Malone, Greg Opperman, Brendan Malikan.
Thanks for stopping by.
And we'll say one more time, the New England Veg Fest is at the DCU Center Sunday, April the 30th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. This is a great sign, by the way. I'm really impressed at I don't want to diss the old Veg Fest, but I feel like the graphic design just keeps getting better.
It took me when you dropped them off the other day, it totally shocked me. Not that I didn't think it was possible. For Worcester, like, this is like, I think, a new high bar in terms of marketing collateral, and they've been flying off the front counter because I think they're just grabbing people's attention. Good stuff.
There you go.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching this show, and we will see you very soon. Bye-bye.